Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Sunshine through my window, that's what I am.
Okay.
It is Thursday, which means it's time for the Front 3 Q&A podcast with me, Adam Bolt, with the one and only Lawrence McKenna.
Guys, there you go, I'm here.
And the man, the myth, the legend himself, Chris Hennage.
Afternoon.
Afternoon indeed. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in to the Front 3. Before we get into the podcast, I do want to say thank you to everyone tweeting me, expressing their concern about my legal troubles. There are no legal troubles. It was a little bit confusing when I did start getting those tweets in. I assume this was you, Lawrence, up to no good on Monday's podcast.
Didn't actually say anything. Nothing was said.
Yeah, no, you definitely said something. I actually found out when my dad texted me saying, what's this about? You weren't on the podcast this week. What's this about legal troubles?
That's so sweet that your dad actually listens.
Oh, he listens. So I just wanted to reassure Dad, the listeners, there are no legal troubles. So be rest assured. It's all good. It's all good. I couldn't make the last couple of podcasts, not because of any legal issues, but unfortunately because my laptop has been stolen. So I've been trying to sort that out with the police, with the insurance company, all this sort of fun and games over the past few days. But everything's fine. The new laptop's here. It means I'm back on the podcast. It means we can get into all your questions you've been sending in on Twitter at the Front Three. So much exciting stuff to talk about today. Gylfi Sigurdsson's move to Everton, Paulinho to Barcelona, our all-time Premier League 11 with the Premier League turning 25. So much to look forward to. I'm sure you'll agree. But before all that, it's the Thursday podcast, which means, as always, it's time for Hole of the Week, the best review on iTunes. Chris, give me a little jingle, give me a little sting while I search for the reviews here.
Ta-da!
Not bad. Incredibly enthusiastic, which is what I liked about that. So many great reviews this week, guys. We really appreciate you sending them in on iTunes, so thank you very much. Quaze92 from the USA saying, greetings from California, USA, long time listener here. I've been consuming your guys' content since the Football Daily Weekly, guys. He's not joking, that is a long time listener. Quaze, thank you for sticking with us for so long. Also a nice review from Alex W. James from the UK, who simply says, love it, keep it up. Gabriel MCN from the UK as well. Usu from the USA, who said, I only listen because of Statland Dave. Gave us a 5-star review. Glad he got that in before Dave missed today's podcast. Fickle Docile with a 5-star review from the UK. Thank you. Oliver Stoneman, also with 5 stars from the UK. CJ Cruzza from the USA found us from the Dirty Tackle podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for your review. There's two potential winners of Hole of the Week this week, and that is Josh Buda from the USA, whose 5-star review is entitled Simply the Best. My name's Josh, and I'm an 18-year-old engineering student from a small town 20 miles outside of Detroit, Michigan. I rarely get the chance to talk to people like myself who love the beautiful game as much as I do, so the Front Three has given me and other listeners like myself an outlet for all things football. Thanks so much for creating this content, and keep up the great work. Love that from Josh Buda from Detroit, Michigan. Great stuff. Also in contention is Parry15 from Australia, whose 5-star review is entitled Good Banter. Boys, I listen to every pod. You guys keep me entertained in Sydney's terrible traffic. Good content, differing opinions, quality analysis. The main reason I sent in this review is to tell Statman Dave he is my spirit animal. We'll pass that on. P.S. I'm allergic to nuts, so I haven't done this just for the prize. I like the honesty. I like the integrity there from Parry 15. Chris, will let you decide this week. Is it Josh Buda from Detroit or is it Parry 15 from Australia?
I will go with Mr. Australia, I think.
Good choice. Good choice. Seeing as you're allergic to nuts, we probably won't send you any Ferrero Rocher. We don't want to kill anyone. We'll send you some lint or something. So Parry 15, thanks so much for your review. Do slide into the DMs on Twitter at the Front Free and claim your prize. Let's get straight into the questions then, guys. First up, a contentious topic. Jack Williams writing in saying, when, for the love of God, is Dave bleaching his hair? It's a great question, Jack. It's the question we're all asking ourselves.
No one knows, Jack. He's making excuses.
Dave's making some excuses recently. You know, he'd agreed that he was going to bleach his hair, that he was going to set a date, but now certain professional commitments mean that he may not be able to do so. He's suggesting that he can put the money that he was going to spend on bleaching his hair, he can donate that to charity. I'm not sure. I'm feeling another vote situation going on here. I still feel like he can bleach his hair. I think he'll look good. It'll give him a professional edge, if anything. But yeah, maybe, I mean, what do you think?
And maybe here's a nice compromise. If it's not the hair on his head, he has to do it somewhere else in his body and then publicly prove it.
Yes, you could hide that sort of bleaching.
Well, I'm not sure, but I've actually heard about these shoots that Dave's going to be doing. It's
interesting, to say the least. But that's the situation, guys. You know, I think you need to tweet him, at Statman Dave, ask him what's going on, pressure him into bleaching that hair because he's trying to get out of it right now. And I'm not a fan of it. I'm not a fan of it. A bet's a bet, you know? An agreement between gentlemen is an agreement. So from what I can see, Dave still needs to bleach that hair. That's what we're all waiting for. Next question. Let's move on to some football questions. Luke Dawe, long-time listener, long-time friend of the show, says, do Everton really need the signing of Gylfi Sigurdsson? Joined the Toffees for £45 million this week, Chris. Most people saying no, they didn't need the signing, and certainly not for that price.
No, I don't think they did. I think it's a bizarre deal because it feels like Ronald Koeman has just been chasing a Moby Dick of sorts, because I think, look, Sigurdsson has quality. I don't think anyone can test that. But I think a lot of his success is rooted in set pieces, being a number 10. And if you've already signed Davy Klaassen for, what was it, £25 million, I think. I'm not sure if it was euros or pounds, but around that figure. And you've got Wayne Rooney again, who was, I would say, another attacking midfielder that really isn't someone that stretches defences and relies more on having, I think, that pace and movement around him. It just seems like stocking up needlessly in a position, unless they're going to approach it with the mentality of having a front three, great podcast, with two sort of number 10 sitting behind a forward, be that Rooney, be that Sandro, whoever. I find it very difficult to rationalise, though, if I'm an Everton fan. It just doesn't really make sense to me.
I couldn't help but wonder, after this signing was announced, Lawrence, what are the scouting departments of these Premier League clubs doing? What is the scouting department at Everton doing if they can't find a cheaper, younger, better alternative to Gylfi Sigurdsson for £45 million?
I think Chris makes a good point. You could probably expand Chris's point a step further and say maybe they see the value in Gylfi Sigurdsson that we don't see. And it is very difficult to say directly how he's going to be played in the team. I say it's difficult because it's impossible. We don't know what Ronald Koeman wants to do with him. We don't know. Maybe he particularly values what he thinks Sigurdsson's going to offer. And I think there probably are people who are scouts, but I imagine that there's also an element of Sigurdsson probably being judged by the coaching staff, or maybe Ronald Koeman himself, that he can take the step up, and that maybe there is £45 million worth of value in that player. Or maybe if I don't know how much, what was £45 million nowadays? If Pogba was that, he's probably around a £20 million player in old money, and that's probably about right.
Next question, on a related note, from Izzy Savinde LaClause. I butchered your name,
wow.
Izzy. I apologise profusely. But she asked a great question. The worst piece of business so far this summer? Gylfi Sigurdsson, of course, in with a shout. Barcelona competing for the title, though, potentially with Paulinho.
Or Neymar.
Yeah, but Paulinho, I mean, I feel bad. I don't like taking
strips off players because, you know, they're all human beings at the end of the day.
Call them shit.
The problem with the Paulinho deal is, and I said this yesterday, it's the context you apply to it after the fact. So on the same day that his deal was being concluded, Juventus signed Blaise Matuidi for 18 million. They're about the same age, I believe, if not only marginally different. You would argue that Matuidi would be a better fit than Paulinho is. I think that deal in a lot of ways paints wider problems that Barcelona are currently facing. So I'm in a funny way, I'm not surprised that the deal doesn't make much sense, because I think a lot of their decisions lately haven't made much sense. I mean, even signing Paulinho in the first place, because you have Sergi Samper in there and you're potentially going to loan him out again. You know, you've got Sergio Roberto, who has been playing right back but wants to play centre midfield. That move's going to annoy him, is already said to have annoyed him. So it seems as if they're lacking a bit of organisation. And I think if you look back historically, most of the bad moves in football occur because a club isn't organised in one form or another.
Paulinho, as you say, it's harsh when Paulinho hasn't kicked a ball for Barcelona yet, and Sigurdsson, of course, hasn't for Everton yet. I say he hasn't kicked a ball. I don't know if you saw his unveiling on Twitter, Paulinho, failing to do some simple kick-ups, you know, the standard unveiling sort of skill, as it were. Didn't go too well for him. So not good omens for Paulinho at Barcelona. On a similar theme, Alex Sanchez at SNZAlex13 on Twitter says, best piece of business so far. As you mentioned there, Matuidi to Juventus for, what, half a Paulinho? Pretty tidy. We've got, I can't even say his name, Kolasinac for Arsenal on a free transfer. Not bad. James Rodriguez on loan to Bayern Munich. Any others that are sort of springing to mind, Lawrence? Best deals of the summer so far?
Salah's not a bad one.
Yeah, bias. I would say Salah's not a bad one.
Typical bias.
Lukaku is definitely good business if he continues down this vein. But then I've heard he's had good form against West Ham in the past. So, and you know, that's hardly the top team in the league. I don't really think that was why Lukaku was bought. Or maybe it was, I don't know.
What about best value signing then? Lukaku, fantastic signing, albeit for a hell of a lot of money. Is there anyone that you're thinking in this market right now, God, that's good value for them?
You could still say that's probably really good value for Lukaku. Who could you go for? You know what? I also think that there's been a lot of value around AC Milan this summer. They've not really overpaid for any of their transfers, and they've pretty much reinvigorated the entire squad.
Vinucci's
definitely a really decent one up there, but they've also got a few other signings as well. The names don't run off the tongue. But then there's also, how much was Bernardo Silva for Man City?
Ooh, that's a good shout.
45, I think.
A lot of money, but pretty good for a player of his quality, and they sort of got in there before some of the other big clubs could make a move, so it could be a very astute signing.
I am wondering, I'm just sort of wondering what value, like what do you consider to be the new, what's a mid-range price for a player now? Is it 30 million?
I don't know, it might be 40 million this summer, because last summer it was the likes of Sissoko going for 30 million. It was kind of like, oh, that was the kind of standard fee. It's been bumped up by 10 million at least this summer. When you see Sigurdsson going for 45, I think it's hard to disagree with that.
You're really fixated on this Sigurdsson for 45 thing, aren't you? You really don't like him.
More fixated on Sissoko for 30 million. Still struggling to get over that. Let's move on to Julian Draxler, Lawrence. The news is that PSG don't want him. Unai Emery has said there's no space for him in this side as it stands. Despite the fact they only signed him in January. There you go. They're just going to dispose of him. Potentially a move to Liverpool on the cards. Maybe Arsenal. Is this something you think Jurgen Klopp should be? They should be ringing alarm bells in the Liverpool offices.
Why would it be ringing bad alarm bells or good alarm bells?
No, good alarm bells. Like the transfer alarm that goes off. Wah, player alert. You know, Drax is available right down the bat pole, the Liverpool pole or whatever it is. Let's get this guy.
That's definitely how it works.
I'm pretty sure that's how transfers work.
Surely it's a Liverpool.
Very good.
So I think Draxler would definitely fit into the squad. I'm not sure he'd fit in as seamlessly as Coutinho. I'm not sure he's also the direct replacement for Coutinho. I think Liverpool are looking for a sort of a metronome that's maybe a little bit further ahead of than not even a metronome, just someone who can control the pace of play. So someone who can basically control how quick the ball moves, that a lot of the play will run through, and also will distract a lot of the players, which then creates space for the Mane and the Salahs, and even the Firmino if he comes in as a false nine. and someone who can then make a relationship and run onto the ball that Firmino is going to be playing, what Firmino and Coutinho cooked up last season. Tactically, I think he could probably make it work. There's the connection of him being a German with Jurgen Klopp, though that doesn't seem to be a massive issue for Klopp. He also seems to favour a lot of people from Eastern Europe, maybe more like the, you know, previously Serbia, those sort of places. And I think it'd be a great buy. I just think it's, you know, probably also going to represent pretty decent value for Liverpool. And the fact is, if they are going to go through with the Coutinho deal, which no one really seems to know whether they are or not, people in Catalonia are saying, obviously, that it's close, or Dembele is close. Both Liverpool and Borussia Dortmund have both sort of gone down the route of, well, actually, neither of our players are sale. We're not even going to negotiate. Dembele sort of went AWOL for a little while. I think Coutinho is... he has a serious back problem, Adam. And, you know, when you go from there, I really think both clubs are just looking to hang on to them until the end of the transfer window, keep them for another season, and then in the end, allow them to go. But I have to go and ask this question. If you are Dembele or Coutinho, do you really want to go to a club like Barcelona that is currently in dire straits and got absolutely smashed in the Supercopa, despite playing a full-strength side?
I would say they've become a less attractive proposition in the last few weeks. You know, are Barcelona in crisis? Maybe there's going to be a bonus podcast this weekend on this very issue. Lawrence, looking deep.
Wow.
You know, the situation of Barcelona right now. Maybe. So keep your eyes peeled. That's all I'll say. Save it for then. Let's move on to the next question.
It's as if we scripted it.
Almost. Pictured City on Twitter, at Pictured City, says, Johnny Evans to Manchester City. According to Sky, what the fuck? So eloquently put there by Pictured City. Please discuss. What do you make of this one, Chris? This is, of course, concerning the reports that Manchester City have tabled an £18 million bid for Johnny Evans. Surely this is just a backup option, someone who fulfills the homegrown quota at Manchester City?
I think he ticks a lot of boxes like that. I see there's been quite a strong contrast between people who don't think he's good enough and people shouting those down.
Does he count as homegrown if he's from North Ireland?
It's where you trained.
Oh, wow.
I mean, Northern Ireland's part of the UK, obviously, but yeah, it's where you train.
Isn't that almost like saying, well, Austria and Hungary can have their homegrowns?
Wait, say that again? Austria and Hungary can have their homegrowns?
What are you chatting?
Yeah, because obviously if England said, well, we can also have Scottish, Welsh and whatever players, would that also be the same for other countries who are sort of associated in some way? Because
but it's where
really
you train, because
convenient.
Cesc Fabregas is homegrown, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. I just think that's certainly
I'm doing air quotes. I'm doing the old air quotes, yeah.
It's, but you know, yes, it's based on where you trained. You count as a homegrown, I think, for a club and a homegrown for a nation. So, like, if you move academies when you're young, you can still count as homegrown for the nation rather than Fulham or Chelsea or Arsenal or whatever. Anyway, I think he ticks a lot of those boxes. The only thing that confuses me is the thought of him crossing Manchester, essentially, because if he's come through United and he seems to hold them in quite high regard, I'd be surprised that he would agree to join their rivals, even though it's obviously a big step up for him. I must confess, when I saw him leave Man United, I didn't see him making a step back up. I think he's a good defender. I can't possibly say I subscribe to the idea that he's good enough for Man City, but at the same time, I would say I don't think he's hugely off the pace or the standard either.
I think he's a short-term option, as you say, ticks those boxes that need to be ticked. And next summer, I'm sure, if Johnny Evans does join the club, he'll be leaving then as Manchester City search for a top-class centre-back. I'm sure that is what is going to happen. That is going to be the case. Let's take the next question from John Sheehan. John Sheehan, friend of the show, really interested on what the TF3 team has to say, i.e. the current Spurs sit situation. Are they looking to challenge? What's Levy's agenda as a chairman? Whew, great question, John. What do we make of all this? Obviously, the Danny Rose comments came out, was it last week, end of last week? a clear sort of come and get me plea from the player, a player who's sort of become a firm sort of fan favourite in the past few seasons. So obviously very disappointing for Spurs fans, but it did raise certain questions, Chris, about the wage structure at the club. Danny Rose, of course, the man who came out and said it publicly, but there's no doubt that there's other players in that dressing room thinking they could double, quadruple their wages if they move to one of the Manchester clubs or, for example, Chelsea. Obviously, Spurs are looking to challenge this season. They're looking to kick on to that next level, something we spoke about many times. But just thinking the long term, the challenge for them is with the wage structure they've got at the club, the £100,000 a week wage limit that has been imposed by Daniel Levy, they're going to struggle potentially to hold on to these players in the long term when their rivals can pay these huge inflated wages every week.
It's a boom and bust cycle. And I think that's why it was imperative, or it is especially now, that Tottenham wins something. Because I know sometimes stats can be used for clickbaity reasons, if you will. But there was one that floated out after the weekend that Huddersfield have been top of the Premier League for longer than Spurs have since 2014. And I think that while Spurs have definitely improved and they've grown into a side that is, I would say, a lot more consistent with its Champions League aspirations, they haven't won anything. And I think that's where the situation with Rose sort of shatters into a lot of different pieces, because I totally see why he wants more money. I think, yes, he's arguably, if not the best left back in the league. So you want to be paid what you feel you're worth relative to the workspace you're in. At the same time, he and his teammates haven't won anything. And you would argue, if you're Daniel Levy or Tottenham, that winners get paid the most. There's a school of thought that says sell him and get rid of him. At the same time, replacing him is incredibly hard. I know Kyle Walker-Peters came in and did fairly solid against Newcastle, but that's a big ask for a guy like that to come in and replace Kyle Walker long-term. I think it'll be Trippier. And plus, one of the benefits I think Spurs have had, and one of the reasons they found the success to the degree they have, is because they've had continuity. And the second you start to deconstruct that team and take key pieces out, you're going to lose that. And it takes time to build. And I think it'd be easy to say, well, Chelsea didn't really have that and they won the league. I am slightly worried that Spurs become the nearly men. Or this generation of Spurs, because I think it has a lot of potential. I think it's just waiting for that right moment to click. And if it's this season, then I guarantee Danny Rose won't care how much he's paid come May if they win the Premier League. He will not in the slightest.
Yeah, it remains to be seen. I think this season is, as we've always said, it is a crucial one. I'm still expecting Spurs to make a couple of signings before the end of the window. Talk of Serge Aurier coming in. Talk of Daniel Levy is going to leave it to the last minute to try and force through a deal for Ross Barkley. So I think once we've got those signings in and we can sort of get an understanding of what the squad looks like going into this season, we'll have more of an idea of how Spurs are going to perform. I think it's going to be difficult for them with Manchester City and Manchester United, most people's favourites for the title, for Spurs to really put a challenge together again and push those teams close. But like you say, I think silverware this season is essential, be it one of the domestic competitions, progress in the Champions League as well. I think getting out of those group stages and showing what Spurs are all about in the knockout stages of the competition is essential as well. So it's a crucial year for the Spurs, it's fair to say.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Next question is from Liam Smith at LiamSmith2002 on Twitter. He says, who is your favourite ever Irish player? It's a great question, Liam. I'm basically half Irish now because I'm marrying an Irish woman. I think that's how it works. Is it? Is that how it works?
What are you doing to an Irish woman?
Just marrying one of them. You know,
marrying it.
Surely the best Irish
player. Is your Mrs. Northern or Republic?
Republic, mate. Yeah. Republic, you know.
Which kind is she? Yeah.
You what?
Nothing.
It's all about Gary Breen, guys. Responsible for one of the best chants of all time. We all dream of a team of Gary Breens. So I'm going to go for Gary Breen. Over 500 appearances in the Football League, in the Premier League, I believe. 60-odd for Ireland. So, you know, a national hero, if not him.
Great kind of fish.
Robbie Keane? I don't know.
Robbie Keane? Well, I mean, surely the same chant can also...
We all dream of a team. Yeah, it's not bad, not bad. Yeah. Gary Breen.
Well, Gary Breen and Robbie Keane, exactly the same amount of syllables.
Yeah, but Robbie Keane's actually like quite good.
I quite like, this one's Damien Duff.
Oh, yeah.
Quite like Damien Duff.
We all like Duffy.
Duff's good because he was also one of those guys who was part of that original Chelsea team. Originally before that, you would never have thought, oh, yeah, Damien Duff, Chelsea team.
Duff, yeah.
You'd almost have just thought, yeah, Damien Duff. Who else is good for? Who's a good Irish player?
John Walters has got a bit of a cult hero vibe about him.
Definitely say that.
He's a good player.
Roy Keane not being mentioned? No.
Roy Keane. I mean, he's not anyone's favourite, really, is he?
Favourite.
I think he's a lot of people's favourite though, because he's the best.
I've heard he's quite charismatic.
Yeah, I've heard that too. Roy Keane's a great shout. I'm going to go for Gary Breen just because I like the charm. Moving swiftly on, Charles Antionades. Another name I've probably butchered. He says, will we ever see a transfer market for managers? Thanks for your question, Charles. As always, great question. No, I'm going to say no.
Brilliant.
Because...
now make it up.
Yeah, let's make it up. Just no, I don't see how that's a possibility. I think we've got enough problems with the transfer market as it is with players right now. There's talk of making that window smaller. Obviously, it brings up all these contentious issues and the money in the game, etc. So I can't see... that being something that is ever going to be voted into the game. I can't see that's something that the clubs and the associations are ever going to be in favour of.
It's a completely different power structure, isn't it, with the manager, I think, as well, and different relationship. But the reason there probably won't be a transfer, I mean, or less, but obviously there's people do pay when they take a manager off someone else. So you could say that is sort of a transfer market, but it's not to the same extent. And there's also, unless there was some sort of flooding of the market, we're not really going to see a series of, sort of these massive transfers of managers. Although a lot of managers can just sort of quit, I guess.
Here's a related-ish manager question from Colin Mahoney. Thoughts on Klopp and Wagner wearing the same glasses for their matches the past weekend? I know they are close, but isn't this too much?
Yeah. Does anyone remember Joe 90 from back in, like, I don't know, the 90s?
No. You're a lot older than us, though, aren't you? You're quite old, too.
Yeah, I'm 42. There was there was a show where this kid would sort of get in the middle of a giant beach ball, and his dad would sort of say, okay, Joe, we're going to teach you, I'm not even joking, some skills. And then the beach ball would sort of spin around a little bit, and it would put the thoughts or, like, the cleverness into his glasses. And then Joe could do all sorts of things. And then with Joe 90, it was actually a really good series. It's called Joe 90.
It sounds like The Matrix a little bit, you know, like a precursor to The Matrix. Where they
My dad used to watch this.
Yeah. It was a really good show. Like, it was really good.
Lawrence, he did. My dad goes on about this all the time.
Lawrence is your dad's age, Chris, so, you know, it makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. I'm 56. So you can go and watch this back on YouTube. It was good. There weren't very many sports-based episodes because it was the same as... it was the same as Thunderbirds, so it's very difficult to make them kick anything.
What was the original question? I've forgotten the question now.
The glasses.
Oh, right, glasses. The glasses.
And the whole point was that it put the cleverness into Joe 90's glasses. And I was just going to say, I thought David Wagner was like sort of, you know, Joe 90, but to Jurgen Klopp.
So Klopp was Jurgen 90. Wagner's cleverness. Is that what you're trying to say?
Just because you win on one weekend, mate, doesn't mean you're a better manager, all right? It's the same as when I let you host the front three. It's the same as people then saying, I think Adam is a better host than Lawrence. People sort of go, yeah, but Lawrence invented hosting.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
You invented hosting. You invented podcasting as well, didn't you? You are the true.
I mean, again, Adam, it's like you say, I am very, very old. So,
John 90 looks a lot like Michael Caine.
He looks a lot like Michael Caine. And also one other guy, I can't remember who, probably every other Thunderbirds character, because most of them did look very, very similar.
Akshay on Twitter at Grishan4 says, who should Manchester United's fourth signing be this summer? Jose Mourinho has always said he wants four signings. He's got three in the door. Which has been the best transfer of the summer? We've already answered that, Grishan, but let's talk about that fourth signing for Manchester United. Obviously Lindelof, obviously Lukaku, obviously Matic. Who do you think is going to be that fourth signing, Chris? Obviously, all the chat was about Ivan Perisic. Looks like that might not happen now. It looks like he could be staying at Inter. Maybe another left winger, another left-sided player that we talked about before, Julian Traxler. He's available, Chris. It just makes sense.
I don't know if they need anyone. Like, I just don't. I look at it and I think...
surely another left-back.
I mean, I've got Luke Shaw. Like, there comes a point where... And maybe this is slightly influenced by the fact that my club has no money to spend. But there's a moment where I kind of look at the thing like, you've spent enough. Like, stop. Like, use what you've got. Like, you've got Luke Shaw for left back. I mean, you've got Martial there sitting on the bench.
Yeah, but he might be off to serve, mate.
You've got Andres Pereira, who's a very good, talented young player. Come off, I would say, the back of a good season with Granada, even though Granada weren't very good. Like, there comes a point where, you know, you can't just keep importing new things all the time. You have to, like, develop some players as well and work with some deficiencies.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like you're ever... I mean, you know, as good as Real Madrid are right now, it's not like you're ever going to build that sort of flawless squad. There is always going to be a way to beat all of these teams. And you've got to admit, it does sort of very much look like a Mourinho side. I'm sort of upset. I'm not upset, but like I'm sort of a bit put out that they didn't sign Perisic. I think it would have been a great signing for them. I think Inter Milan have done very well to hold on to him. It's also kind of upsetting because you think it would have been another, maybe a really good announcement thing to make Perisic do a Periscope to announce. But
that's the real tragedy of this
move,
isn't
it? That's the real tragedy of this whole situation is social media stuff. God. There wasn't a whole series of periscopes.
Next question is from Ignoring Dragoon, who says, when will Marco Asensio win the Ballon d'Or? Not even an if, it's a when with this guy, Lawrence. Scoring absolute screamers for fun. Scored two, I believe, in the two legs of the Supercopa final there. This guy is the real deal, and he's going to win the Ballon d'Or this year. Maybe not. Okay, maybe. I'm getting ahead of myself. But
possibly. Possibly, yeah. You're definitely getting... I mean, if the year was 2020, do you reckon by 2020 we win the Ballon d'Or?
2020, you know
yeah,
what?
That's 3 years away. 2020 is not a million miles away from the bounds of possibility.
Here's a bold-ish, but probably not that bold prediction. Cristiano Ronaldo wins it this year. That makes it 5-5 between him and Messi. Neither of them are going to win it again because Marco Asensio is going to have an incredible season and... he's going to help Spain to win the World Cup next year, therefore cementing his Ballon d'Or and the first other person to win it since, that's not Messi or Ronaldo, since...
and then Neymar.
Neymar, you know, he's not going to win it in Liga, man. Let's face it. Anyway, there you go. January of 2019, he's going to win the Ballon d'Or. That's when.
That guy doesn't agree. I have to go, guys.
Why are you going?
Because my hob has arrived.
No, what? What do you mean?
My hob in my house broke, so I've got to go and get it fixed.
sounds pretty important.
It's gruesome.
Lawrence, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you. It's a shame you have to go, but we all understand. We'll speak to you soon. Say bye.
I was here, and that's all that matters.
Okay,
see you later, guys.
Go on, you can hang out
now. See you, Chris.
See ya.
Adam, I'll see you later.
See you later.
See you later, Adam.
Is he gone? Later. Is he gone? Never liked that guy. Are we still? Oh, we're still recording. All right, okay. Next question. We've got a few more here, Chris. May as well finish up with a few more. It's become a front two. Nice intimate chat, as it were. Chris, we've got a question here from the one and only, what's his name? Thibaut Hacke. Again, another name I'm really struggling with the names today. What degrees did you guys do for your careers? I think we've answered this before, but we'll answer it again for you, Thibaut. I myself did media and communications at Goldsmiths University. Funnily enough, Lawrence did the same, obviously many years before me, because he is obviously quite a bit older, as we've established on this very podcast. Chris, what degree did you do for your career in journalism?
Just that. I did journalism at Northumbria University.
Makes sense. It does make sense, to be fair.
I had two offers. I had... Well, actually, I don't know if you still put five universities down, but you did when we did it. I got rejected from two, which I can't remember which the two were. I had an interview for Edgehill that I just didn't turn up for. An offer from Leeds and an offer from Newcastle.
Wow. Wowee. Popular man. A couple of offers there. Are people getting their A-level results today? Is that right?
Yes.
Yes. Good luck to everyone out there. And remember... What do people say? Something like, don't worry about your results because look how successful I am and I got 10 U's or something. That's usually what people say, isn't it?
Yeah. Today is usually when social media is awash with people telling you not to worry because they've become successful without education. I think you should always try and get an education when you can.
Yeah, that's very important.
And the truth is... And I certainly consider I didn't do very well in my levels. And part of the reason is because I didn't put the work in. So if you haven't done well and you know you haven't put the work in, then it's a great moment for self-reflection.
Yeah, not just don't worry about it. It's learn from those mistakes and be better. Be a better person. Be the best you can be. That's what it's all about. Final few questions now. First up, one from Jamie Dorkin here, who said, can we get a shout out to Mats Hummels? He has joined Juan Mata's Common Goal 1% pledge. Mats Hummels deciding to pledge 1% of his wages to charity, essentially, joining Juan Mata in that pledge. It's a great thing to see, isn't it, Chris? I mean, in the cynical world of football where you can't help but feel these millionaires are alienated from the fans themselves, from the working class game, they're giving something back at least. It's a sort of much needed happy story, as it were.
Yeah, it's a really nice gesture. I hope more players take them on or take on that opportunity, because I think it's nice to give back. And look, obviously they don't have to, but I think it's a good way to kind of reestablish the bond.
Do you think it's churlish of me to say, maybe they could have gone to 2%, maybe, given that they earn such incredible amounts, that maybe 2%, they wouldn't miss that, you know, double it?
Yeah, I think it's more symbolic. That's the thing. I think it's symbolic.
It would be nice to see more footballers join there. I think it's great that Mats Hummels has decided to join Juan Mata in doing this, because it will encourage more footballers to do the same, which can only be a good thing at the end of the day. You know, I can't be too churlish about it. Final question. Ooh, this is a good one to finish on for me and you, Chris. Of course, the Premier League turned 25 earlier this week, 25 years of the Premier League. So Tom Bright has written in to say, what is your all-time Premier League 11? It's a great question. Let's do it, Chris. Should we go for a 4-4-2 classic English formation, bit old school, allows us to get two strikers in there, some wingers, blah blah blah. Fair enough,
sounds good.
Okay, goalkeeper. Any disagreements with Peter Schmeichel?
No.
Okay, simple as that. Peter Schmeichel is our goalkeeper. Let's go for a left back. It's got to be Ashley Cole, one of the greatest English left backs of all time.
Yes, I would agree with that one as well.
Well, let me just rephrase that. One of the greatest English defenders of all time. Yeah. Centre backs, a little bit more difficult. A few more options there. We're looking at the likes of Tony Adams, Sol Campbell, John Terry, Nemanja Vidic. My head is saying John Terry, fantastic centre back. Won countless five Premier League titles, I think. He's won a number of Premier League titles as well, of course. It's been a mainstay of the Premier League. But yet, my heart says, there's no way you can put John Terry in. He's an absolute scumbag. So maybe Nemanja Vidic or Rio Ferdinand. I prefer to put them in, maybe.
That's a good question. Tony Adams, maybe? No?
Tony Adams. Yeah, I can get on board with Tony Adams. I can definitely get on board with Tony
Sol
Adams.
Sol Campbell?
Yeah.
Probably harder for you, I imagine, but still.
Difficult. But, you know, I'm trying to remain impartial.
I'm trying to think.
He's on the pitch, talking about the on-the-pitch qualities, as it were. Would you put in one of the Manchester United centre-backs there who were part of
Rio
the...
Rio Ferdinand, I would.
Yeah, I think Rio Ferdinand.
Not sold on Vidic, personally. I know that will get me a lot of antagonistic comments from United fans, but yeah.
Rio Ferdinand is the quintessential Rolls-Royce of a defender, so I think, for me, Rio Ferdinand should be in there. So we'll go for Rio. Partnering him... It's between John Terry then, Sol Campbell, Tony Adams.
I read recently that Shearer said he was never worried about going up against Sol Campbell, but Tony Adams he always had a tough time with.
We use that as our tiebreaker then. So we're putting in Tony Adams.
Yes.
Tony Adams alongside Rio Ferdinand. Right back. Hard to overlook good old Gary Neville in this role.
Like Dixon, no. I think, yeah, go on, he gets in. I do think Neville has a slight tint of revisionism towards his career. Like, he won a lot, of course, but I never really thought he was, like, world-class. I never really watched him and thought, wow, he's amazing.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Who else do we have here? Let's go centre midfield, then. Centre midfield, we're looking at the likes of Paul Scholes, Gerard Lampard, of course. Who would you like to put in? Of those
three. Lampard has to be in there.
Lampard, I would agree with that. I don't think you can argue with his goal record and, of course, his trophy haul as well. Alongside him, do we go for Scholes? Do we go for Gerrard? It's tough. It is tough.
Gerrard never won a Premier League title, that's the thing.
Does that automatically disqualify him from the race, even though he's one of the greatest?
Well, you could argue because of that he's never had the consistency. But then you could also say that he never had the quality of teammate either.
Let's make this easier by just saying, okay, the qualification for this team that we're making right now, you have to have won a Premier League to be in with a shout. Therefore, Gerrard is not in with a shout. Surely then, is it Paul Scholes who goes in alongside him?
Yeah.
One of the most decorated...
Scholes or Carrick.
One of the most decorated footballers of all time. Of course, the most decorated, I believe, most decorated British footballer, Ryan Giggs. He's got to be in on the left, surely. Come on, you can't pick anyone else on the left of midfield over Ryan Giggs, surely.
I'm just thinking, that's why I'm just making sure that I'm not ignoring someone that's painfully obvious.
I think from here on out,
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, I'd give Giggs.
No players played more Premier League games than Giggs, of course. I can't even remember how many Premier League titles he won. But yeah, Giggsy gets it. On the right, Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yes.
One of the greatest to be in the Premier League. That final
scored
season.
Scored an insane amount for a winger as well, if you think about it.
Oh, yeah. I think he scored 31 goals in one of his final seasons at Manchester United. Won countless individual honours here. Won the Ballon d'Or in the Premier League. The last Premier League player to win that title. So, yeah, Cristiano Ronaldo, I think, has to go to. Up front for me, it's simple. Alan Shearer, the all-time top scorer in the Premier League. And Thierry Henry, potentially the best player to ever play in the Premier League.
Perfect.
Okay. Schmeichel in goal. Gary Neville right back. Tony Adams and Rio Ferdinand. A rock-solid partnership at centre-back. On the left, had to be Ashley Cole, left of defence. On the right, Cristiano Ronaldo. Paul Scholes pairing up with Lampard in the middle. Left of midfield, it had to be Ryan Giggs. And Shearer and Henry up front. That is one hell of a team, Chris.
I think it's a fantastic team.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, brings an end to this Front 3 Q&A podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for sending in all your questions on Twitter. Do continue to do so over the next week. If you want to be featured on next week's Q&A podcast, it's at the Front 3 on Twitter. Do leave us a review and rate the podcast on iTunes as well. It does help new people find the Front 3, which we very much appreciate. And do keep your eyes peeled on Saturday morning, potentially for a little bonus podcast on Barcelona. Yeah, a nice little surprise for you there, hopefully. Until next Monday, which will be the weekend review as always, Chris, where can the good people, where can the listeners, where can the whole find you?
At the Front 3.
Oh, very selfless. I'm going to be selfish. You can find me at Adam Boltwood on Twitter, just tweeting super hot fire every day of the week. That's how it goes. Guys, enjoy your weekends, enjoy the weekend's football, and we'll see you on Monday.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.